Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
Everything in our life has been turned upside down by the fact that Jessica is missing. And I think that, you know, if people just need to put themselves in our position and, you know, say to themselves, what would I want someone to do if the shoe was on my foot? Somebody knows. Somebody else knows what happened to her.
On June 8th, 2018, 31-year-old Jessica Earle was last seen in Tallapoosa, Georgia. She was in the midst of an argument with a man she had met the month before named Jeffrey Seth Odom. This argument was over money Jessica had given Odom to purchase a four-wheeler for her son's upcoming birthday. After some time, Odom had not done so and refused to give Jessica her money back. According to witnesses, Jessica and Seth were at a friend's house when the argument broke out. Odom took the keys to the car Jessica was using that day and hid them, trying to prevent her from leaving the house. At some point during the argument, Jessica left the house and walked away from Odom. She called her friend asking for a ride, but was unable to get one. Jessica stated that she would just walk back to her home. After Jessica walked away and made that one phone call, she would never be seen or heard from again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 142 of The Vanished, Jessica Earle's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. For this episode, I had the opportunity to speak with Jessica's mom, Sandra, about the events leading up to her daughter's disappearance. According to Sandra, Jessica's son had a birthday coming up around the time that she went missing. She had been waiting eagerly for her tax refund to come in so she could buy him a present. Specifically, she wanted to buy him an ATV. Jessica had recently made friends with a man named Jeffrey Seth Odom, but he more commonly goes by his middle name, Seth. He informed her that he had a friend who was willing to sell one, and he was willing to help her out by doing the transaction for her. All he needed was the money for the ATV.
She had been waiting on her income tax refund for quite a few months. And on the Saturday before she disappeared, which I guess would have been the second, she had received a notice that her refund had been deposited to her bank account. But she didn't have a card for that account. So on either Monday or Tuesday, she went to the bank and she managed to get them to order her a card on that account. And then she went and got her a prepaid card from Walmart and put a couple $1,000s on it. Her son's birthday was on the 23rd. And so she wanted to buy him a four-wheeler for his birthday. She knew this guy, Seth, for about a month. They were, I guess you would call them friends. I wouldn't really call them friends, but more like acquaintances. But at any rate, she had mentioned that she wanted to get her son a four-wheeler for his birthday, and he told her that he had a friend that had one that he was selling. So she gave him money for the four-wheeler, and she spent the next couple of days trying to find out from him, you know, where's the four-wheeler, where's my money, what have you done, you know, with my money, and the like. On Thursday, she spent most of the day Thursday with a friend of hers and her friend's husband trying to locate Seth to get the money back from him. And when she finally caught up to him, he was at the house on Little Circle Drive.
This house on Little Circle Drive is the last place that Jessica was ever seen alive.
He talked her into staying there with him, and her friend left and went home. And she stayed there, spent the night there, got up the next morning, and there's still no four-wheeler and there's still no money. And so they had a huge argument inside the house.
This argument with Seth was too much for Jessica. He wouldn't give her the car keys back, so she decided to just walk on her own.
She called her friend back and asked her friend to come and pick her up because Seth had taken the keys to a car that Jessica had borrowed from the same friend, by the way.
Jessica was borrowing her friend's car because she didn't have one of her own, but she was in the process of looking for one to purchase. In the days leading up to her disappearance, she was seen on video surveillance at a local car dealership test driving cars with Seth Odom. But Jessica was left stranded when Seth wouldn't give her the keys to the car she had borrowed.
Her friend couldn't come and pick her up because she had a newborn. She just had surgery, so she wasn't able to drive, and her husband had their other vehicle at work. So she told Jessica, look, just, you know, just calm down. She said Jessica was hysterical. She told Jessica to calm down, hang on, and as soon as, you know, Jake gets home from work, I'll come and pick you up. And she said, Jessica told her, I'm just going to walk. So she said Jessica didn't say goodbye. The phone just kind of sounded like somebody hung it up. She went to lay down. About an hour later, she got a phone call from Jessica, but she was sleeping and she didn't get it. And the first phone call came in at about 9:30. The second phone call came in about an hour later. And then there was a third phone call that came in around sometime between 11 and 11:30. Jessica didn't leave a message. Brittany woke up about 30 minutes after that last call came in and tried to call Jessica back, and her phone went straight to voicemail. She just kept calling, and when she couldn't reach her, she finally called Jessica's older brother. My son tried to call her, and it also went to voicemail, and they did this all day Friday. On Saturday, my son called me and asked me when was the last time I had spoken to Jessica. And I told him on Wednesday. I talked to her on Wednesday when she was finally able to get her bank card with her money on it. And I said, when's the last time you talked to her? He said, well, I talked to her Thursday. On Monday, Jessica's friend Brittany went to the police department and filed a missing persons report. And they told her that since Jessica was an adult, that they couldn't report her as missing. That Friday, which would have been a week to the day that she had gone missing, I had been contacting or trying to contact the detective that was working on the case, and they never would call me back. And so finally on Friday, I left a not so nice message to them and let them know primarily that if they didn't call me back, I was going to come up there and storm the police department until somebody gave me some answers. And she finally called me back. And when she called me back, she tells me that she had not listed Jessica as missing. Jessica was listed as a BOLO, a be on the lookout, which is generally something that they issue for someone who they suspect of having committed a crime or been involved in a crime. So as I proceeded to give her the information that I had, she got a little concerned and she said, okay, now I'm going to go and I'm going to do a missing persons and we'll start from here.
According to Sandra, the investigation into Jessica's disappearance did not start off on the right foot. The house that Jessica was last seen at was known to be a place where drug use would occur frequently, and someone stated that Jessica appeared to be high the day she went missing, something her family doesn't believe. While Jessica had issues in the past with drugs, at the time of her disappearance, she had been clean for some time. However, even if it was true, it shouldn't taint the investigation in any way. Jessica is still a person. She's still someone's loved one, and people wanted to know where she had gone. According to the sheriff's office, Seth's mother stated that Jessica called her to inform her where she was headed.
And Seth's mother told them that she got a phone call from Jessica saying that she was going to go to Louisiana so she could get into a rehab and get clean. And the mom, his mother, said that Jessica had called her from someone else's phone. The odd thing about that was that when Jessica was able to get that prepaid card, the first thing she did was go to the AT&T store and purchase a brand new phone. She got the new Galaxy phone that had just come out. Her friend Brittany was with her. She bought a case for it and everything. So she would not have needed to use somebody else's phone. She had a brand new phone. And secondly, if she was going to come to Louisiana, she would have had to contact somebody because she didn't have a vehicle to get down here. And she wouldn't have been able to bring Brittany's car. And she did not yet have a car of her own. So, I mean, that kind of fell apart, you know, from the beginning. In every statement issued by the sheriff's office spokesperson and every interview given by the sheriff and or his spokesperson, they told the public that Jessica was not missing, that she had in fact checked herself into rehab. They just didn't know which rehab it was. And they were certain that as soon as Jessica's mind was clear, that she would come out and let everybody know that she was okay. At one point, they even made a public plea to Jessica in writing with a newspaper, you know, telling her, please contact your family and let them know that you're okay.
Sandra and those closest to Jessica knew she wouldn't have just up and left her life in Georgia without letting a single person know her plan, especially if the plan was to check herself into a rehab facility. Something about this whole situation was off. Sandra knows her daughter better than what the sheriff's office was projecting her to be.
One thing that I should tell you is that Jessica's father passed away in 2011. His birthday is July the 3rd. That was a day that Jessica celebrated quietly, but she always made certain to release a Chinese lantern with her children in celebration of his life. Her son's birthday was on June the 23rd. She would have never missed that, regardless of what anybody says. She would have never missed it. His birthday came and went without notification. Her father's birthday came and went. She spoke to her brother every single day. His phone calls from her stopped that Thursday night, was the last call he got from her on the 7th of June. I spoke to her every 2 or 3 days on the phone, but she messaged me every day, and I didn't get any messages from her since that Thursday. Her younger brother had not received any messages from her in 3 or 4 days. They didn't speak quite as often as the rest of us did because he works a lot. So, but she did try to talk to him on the weekends when he had his daughter so she could talk to them. And that stopped.
It was clear to Sandra that something happened to Jessica on June 8th. She was very much involved in her family's life, and she had 2 children to care for. She would have never just cut them off suddenly. I was curious to know if there was activity on any of Jessica's accounts that would possibly help figure out what had happened to her.
The last transaction on her bank card was on that Friday. I don't know what time it was because that information I could not get. But the last transaction was at a Walmart for $2.43. And that was on that prepaid card, not on the regular bank card, which was kind of odd because she had gotten that bank card and had activated it. Actually, her brother was there when FedEx delivered it, and he signed for it and handed it to her. So we know that she got that bank card. There's just a lot of things that have occurred between that time and now that have gone uninvestigated, unchecked. No one's really followed through on them. And at last note, the sheriff's office had decided that she just walked off in the woods to commit suicide, of which they have no evidence, I might add. So, you know, she went from being on drugs in rehab to now having committed suicide.
Why would the sheriff's department make such huge assumptions about Jessica with no evidence to back it up? As Sandra previously stated, the sheriff's office had accused Jessica of being on drugs, saying that maybe she had gone to rehab, and now that she had committed suicide. It doesn't make sense as to why they would make such leaps. During this time, the sheriff's department did want to speak to Seth Odom. They wanted to see if he would be able to provide some information as to what happened to Jessica. However, they could not locate him for some time, but he eventually turned himself in for questioning.
Seth turned himself in on July the 4th, which is the day after Jessica's father's birthday. And he had been bitten by a snake, and he had this bite was infected. And when they picked him up, he told them that he had no idea where Jessica was. He asked for a lawyer.
About a week after Seth turned himself in, he had a change of heart and decided to speak to the police.
His statement to them was that he and Jessica had had a fight over a needle and that she walked off because he wouldn't give her the needle. And the last time he saw her, that she went into the woods. He said he pulled up alongside her as she was walking and asked her to get in the car. And she said, "I'm not getting the car with you. I'm going to look for arrowheads." And that she walked into the woods. There's a problem with that statement because the people that were in the house when they had the argument told the police that they were arguing because Jessica had given him this $500 and she wanted her money back. The only people that really know the truth aren't really talking. We know that, and they know, the police department knows that the argument was over money, not over a needle. But yet they still release the information to the public, making it sound like Jessica was an addict.
It's unclear as to why the police would release a statement like this, especially if there are conflicting stories as to what the argument was about between Seth and Jessica. Regardless, Sandra knows the type of person her daughter is, and also that something was wrong with Odom's story about Jessica hunting arrowheads. This was a pastime for Jessica when she wasn't busy or working. She would go to familiar areas and look around for arrowheads to collect. Sandra stated that Jessica wouldn't just storm off into the woods because of an argument and decide to hunt for arrowheads in a place she didn't know. Sandra pointed out what Jessica's friend Brittany recalls from their conversation the day Jessica went missing.
When she talked to her friend Brittany, she was hysterical. Brittany said she was so hysterical that she could barely understand what she was saying, but she understood enough to know that they were fighting over the money, that he wouldn't give her the money back, and that now she wasn't going to be able to get her son what she wanted to get him for her birthday, for his birthday. She was hysterical, and she was known to have panic attacks, and it did not take much to set her off. I hate to say that she was emotionally fragile, but she had been through a lot, and it wasn't anything that she didn't know how to handle. She knew how to calm herself down. Removing herself from the situation was her way of calming herself down. And then, you know, the phone call to Brittany, and, you know, Brittany tried to talk to her to get her to calm down. And like I said, the last thing Brittany heard from her is, I'm just going to walk. And that was it.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. While researching this case, I came across an article indicating that Seth's mother was arrested for giving police false information. Apparently, while police were looking for Seth, his mother, along with a few others, stated that she didn't know his whereabouts. This is something that would prove to be untrue. I asked Sandra about this and found out that Seth's mother had actually called her at one point regarding this whole situation.
She actually called me as soon as the wanted posters came out with his name and Jessica's name on it. She called me on my phone and asked me to please have them take his name off the poster and his picture down. And I told her no. You know, he was the last person she was seen with. And that was when she told me that Jessica contacted her from somebody else's phone and said that she was going to check herself into rehab.
This rehab story just wasn't adding up to Sandra. So she asked Seth's mom just how that could be possible.
She's got no insurance. There's no way the money that she's got left in the bank is going to cover any amount of rehab. So, you know, how is she going to check herself into rehab? And how is she going to get to Louisiana? And she couldn't answer those questions. And then, you know, I told her, I said, when you see your son, and I know you're going to see your son, I said, you need to let him know. He needs to come clean. He needs to come clean. And she said she would do whatever she could. Well, apparently after Seth was arrested, they were able to go through his phone and they found messages and phone calls between he and his mother. That was the reason that she was arrested. Now, what those conversations entailed, that I don't know. So I don't know in what fashion she helped him. I just know that she did.
I was curious, since it appeared that the police had their own theories when it came to where Jessica was, if there were any search efforts put forth by them to help locate any evidence as to what happened to Jessica.
According to them, they did 5 searches in the woods on 4-wheelers and walking through the woods. Harrison County and officers from 2 other counties that they named. I want to say one of them was Polk. I'm not sure what the other one, maybe Paulding. Those searches were done without the assistance of any kind of search animals. I have a friend of mine that works with a search and rescue group down here in St. Tammany Parish, and they offered their assistance, and the sheriff's office told them no. EquiSearch out of Florida and EquiSearch out of Texas both contacted the sheriff's office and offered their assistance in searching the woods on horseback, and the sheriff's office told them no. We got together a search party to go and search the woods between the area where Jessica lived and where she was last seen. We searched one piece of property, and the sheriff's office stopped me and threatened me with jail if I went to another property to search. That was the only conversation that I had with him. That was when that had occurred. I asked him, I said, well, you know, we have 3 different places that we've been given permission by the owners. And he said, flatly, I don't care if you have permission or not. If you step foot on one other piece of property to do any searches at all, I will arrest you and everyone with you, and you will go to jail and you will stay there. He didn't mince his words. He told me, he said, you know, asked me where I was from. I said, I'm from Louisiana. You know where I'm from. And he said, well, get your butt in your car and drive yourself back to Louisiana, because we don't need you up here trying to do our job. I said, I'm not trying to do your job. I'm trying to find my daughter. He said, that's my job. I said, then do it. Every officer you have available right now is standing out here in this parking lot to keep me from going to look for my daughter. Instead of y'all searching for my daughter, you're trying to stop me. Where is the logic in that?
The hostility that the sheriff has towards Sandra and those working to locate Jessica doesn't make much sense. Why wouldn't they want their help? Like Sandra stated, many services that do just what she was trying to do, search for a missing person, were denied by the sheriff's department. But why? Sandra thinks it might have to do with the fact that the sheriff's second cousin was arrested for helping Seth Odom evade police. It should be noted that around the time of Jessica's disappearance, Seth Odom was seen on camera footage riding an ATV with a duffel bag, both of which have not been located since. The people who lived at the house where Jessica was last seen were also spotted loading items from a shed into the back of a pickup truck, and then those items were taken to a dump. Several calls were made to police for them to look into this, but it wasn't until days later that they actually followed up on the tip. By this point, the items were moved. Officials called Jessica's mother to inform her that there was no indication that Odom riding the four-wheeler with a duffel bag had anything to do with Jessica or her disappearance. Nor did the items being taken to the dump. According to them, it was all legitimate dumping items that were disposed of. Before we go into any more on that, let's take a step back and figure out who is Jeffrey Seth Odom and when did he meet Jessica. According to Sandra, Jessica texted her on May 8th, telling her about meeting him and how good-looking he was. The following day, Jessica was going to drive down to Louisiana to get a car her mom had purchased for her. She was originally supposed to drive down by herself, but now she was accompanied by Seth Odom.
I had actually purchased her a vehicle, and she was supposed to be coming down here to get it. I had rented the car, and I drove the rental car. Her brother drove the rental car up there to her, and then she drove back down here in the rental car, dropped him off, and she went back to Georgia because she had a job and she needed a way to get to work. So she had the rental car for about a week, and then I found her a car down here that I purchased for her. And she was supposed to come down here on the 9th and get that car. When I spoke to her on the 8th and she told me that she had, you know, met this gorgeous guy, her meeting him had something to do with her coming down here to get the car. I know she did not want to drive down here by herself because she just didn't like driving alone. And she was trying to find somebody who could, you know, ride down here with her because she was just going to pick up the car and turn around and drive right straight back. Somehow or another, he ended up being the one to ride with her. They drove the rental car down here. We turned it in and they drove the car that I purchased for her to Georgia. They got back to Georgia on Thursday, and on Friday, Seth was driving the car to bring her to work, and he fell asleep at the wheel and totaled her car out. She had it for 2 days, and he totaled it out. He would not let her drive the car at all, and that was, someone else told me that. She was knocked out. He apparently some kind of way managed to get out of the car, carried her away from the car, and got somebody to come and pick them up and left the car wherever it was. And because she was knocked out, she didn't even know where they had wrecked. He didn't take her to the doctor. He didn't take her to the hospital. He took her to somebody's house. I guess she slept for a little while, and then he managed to get her a ride to get her back to the house that she was living at. And then on Saturday, she called me and told me that he had wrecked the car.
Many news reports and articles have stated that Jessica and Seth were dating. But according to Sandra, that was not the case. She told me that Jessica had a boyfriend.
I would not say they were dating. Jessica had a boyfriend. And when I tell you my daughter's been through a lot, it's unbelievable some of the stuff that she's had to persevere. In March, her boyfriend beat the crap out of her unrecognizably. And she called us, and my sons and I drove up there, picked her up, packed her things, and brought her down here. A week later, the same boyfriend showed up down here, and she went back to Georgia with him. April, she called me running down the street because he had hit her again. And she called me and begged me to call the police because he was coming up behind her and she didn't feel like she had time. So she called me and she had me on speed dial. So I called the police department and then I called her brother, who also called the police department. They showed up at the house where Jessica and her boyfriend were staying and they arrested her boyfriend, not for beating her. Although she was visibly, you could tell that she had been hit a couple of times. Her nose was bleeding. Her mouth was bleeding and she had a knot on her head. She sent me pictures. And they arrested him and he went to jail for an outstanding warrant for a probation violation.
After Jessica's boyfriend was arrested, she continued to live at the home that they shared along with her boyfriend's mother. It's important to note that this boyfriend who had abused Jessica in the past was incarcerated at the time of her disappearance.
She met Seth about a week after her boyfriend went to jail. Though they talked, she had given him rides to work. Not sure where he worked himself, but now this is what she told me, that she had picked him up and given him rides. So I'm assuming that they met through him needing a ride and she had the rental car. I don't really know exactly how they met, but to classify them as having dated, I know that Seth had a steady girl that he dated on a regular basis because that girl contacted me. Her friends contacted me and let me know that she and Seth were dating and that Jessica and Seth were not dating. And then quite a few people made it clear. But again, that was something else that the police department harped on, was that she and Seth were dating, even though they were not. I won't even call them friends. I call them acquaintances because I don't think she really knew him. And when she found out through a mutual friend of theirs that he had an extensive record, that was part of the reason for her trying to get away from him when she did that Thursday, when she was trying to get her money from him. That was when she had learned about his record. And she didn't want anything further to do with him, so she just wanted her money. But then, like I said, somehow he convinced her to stay there that night because he was going to go get the four-wheeler, and then he never did.
Since Jessica has gone missing, Seth has turned himself into the police, but has provided no information as to what happened to her.
He is still in jail. He is not in jail on any charges relating to Jessica's disappearance, though. He is in jail on warrants that were issued prior to Jessica's disappearance. There's a possession of a gun by a convicted felon, there's a stolen vehicle charge. There's three or four different charges that he was charged with.
One other thing I was curious about was the theory that Seth and Jessica were fighting over a needle. Witnesses state that this isn't true. They claim that the argument prior to her disappearance had to do with the money that Seth refused to give back to Jessica. I asked Sandra if she would be comfortable shedding more light on this part of Jessica's life.
This is a tough question for me to answer. Jessica had a problem in December of 2016. She dated a guy. They had lived together for about 3 years following her divorce. And he was a very heavy drug user. She, up until December of 2016, had never used drugs. So at some point in December, she had a meltdown and she started using. I don't know what drug it was that she was using, but in March of 2017, something told me I needed to go get her. So I drove up there and packed her house up, put it in a U-Haul, took it to a storage, and basically said, "You're coming home." She had some things that she needed to take care of. She had to get her driver's license and her some other stuff and talk to her landlord. And then she was going to come down to Louisiana that week. I'm not really sure what happened, but somehow or another, the guy that she was living with ended up in the car, and they were going to the probation officer, and he was on probation. Jessica had never been in trouble with the law a day in her life. The probation officer found some pills on her boyfriend, and she and her boyfriend were both arrested because it was her car that they were in. So she was in jail for, that was in March of 2000, and I think it was March. I'm pretty sure it was March of 2017. So between December and March, she used, and you could tell that she used. She was very emaciated. When she got out, I bonded her out in May, I believe, and she stayed in Georgia because she was on bond and she wasn't allowed to leave, although she wanted to, but she wasn't allowed to leave. She met AP in June. That's the boyfriend that she lived with this past year. And she had been living with him since early August of 2017. Up until the time that he went to jail, to my knowledge, she was not using drugs. To say that she had not at all, that I can't say that because I don't know. I wasn't there. But I don't believe that because, when I talked to her, I could tell a difference between the Jessica when she was using and the Jessica when she was not using. And the fact that her brother had gone up there almost every weekend and stayed with her every weekend, if she had been using, he would have known. And he has told me that she was not using. And like I said, he was there the week before. So I can't say that Jessica was using at the time of her disappearance.
It's no secret that this type of history with drugs taints people's opinions of a person. But what people tend to forget is that this is someone's loved one. Jessica Earle was a daughter, sister, mother, and friend. Her past issues with substances should not hinder an investigation into her whereabouts. In a perfect world, it wouldn't. Sandra knows that this information about Jessica ripples out into untrue theories about where she has gone. Even if Jessica was having issues with drugs, she would have told her mom that she needed help.
She would have told us that she felt like she needed to go. She would have told us. I mean, she was a grown woman. And what she did with her life was her business. And, when confronted and asked, Jessica, are you using drugs? She didn't lie to me. So there would have been no reason for her to not say to me or to her brother, I need to go to rehab.
I can't begin to fathom the frustration that Sandra and her family feel when it comes to the investigation into Jessica's disappearance. To know your loved one so well, and to not be listened to for reference is a roadblock that no person should ever have to face. Even though Jessica's mother has had the threat of being arrested thrown at her if she tries to search for her daughter, other people are still looking for Jessica.
I mean, I'm not going to tell you that people aren't looking because people are. They're just not looking with the public eye knowing that they're looking.
It's hard to comprehend why Sandra searching for Jessica would be such a problem. Sandra has crossed paths with a deputy who warned her that the sheriff had specifically told them to arrest her or anyone else searching for Jessica on the spot.
When we went to search, the place where we went to meet up at, there was a sheriff's deputy that drove past, and he waited until he saw a bunch of us out there, and he stopped at the roadside, and he said, look, I'm here to do y'all a favor. I'm just letting y'all know that the sheriff has told us that if y'all go on anybody's property, that we're to arrest you on the spot. And I looked him dead in his face, and I said, well, watch and arrest me, because I'm going. And I said, I asked him, I said, do you know who I am? I said, I am Jessica's mother. I'm not going to let you stop me from looking for my kid. And he said, I'm just telling you what the sheriff said. So I asked him again. I said, so you're telling me that Sheriff Mixon said that if I go to a property and look for my daughter, that I'm going to go to jail? And he said, yes, ma'am. We left that spot and went somewhere else. We went to the lady's house that was with us, and we searched her property. And then I was contacted by a journalist who wanted to meet me somewhere. We met up at a parking lot. And while we were standing in the parking lot doing an on-camera interview, the sheriff and two other deputies pulled up and waited until the interview was completed to tell me that I wasn't allowed to search anymore. And I will also tell you that while we were driving from one spot to the next, We were in contact with several other property owners who said, please come check my property. And we were headed there to do that. The sheriff had his deputies parked. Jessica went missing from 266 Little Circle Drive in Tallapoosa. The sheriff had his deputies parked at both ends of Little Circle Drive with the entire driveway blocked so that we could not even drive down that road, a public road. He had it blocked. There were two deputies at one end, two cars at one end, and two cars at the other end. Nobody was looking for Jessica. They were looking for me. They were looking to stop me from trying to find my daughter. And then when we stopped to do the interview, I don't know how he knew we were there, but he pulled up to the ballpark where we were standing doing the interview. He pulled up off camera so you couldn't see him. And he waited until the news reporter put her camera away and got in her van before he spoke to me. And when he spoke to me, I tried to talk to him civilly, and he immediately got an attitude with me. And I told him the same thing I told the other officer. I'm gonna look for my daughter. I have permission to go on people's property to look for my child. You can't stop me legally. And he let me know that regardless of whether or not I had property, I had permission from property owners, that I would go to jail if they saw me in the woods or saw me go into the woods, because I didn't belong there. It wasn't my home. It wasn't my place. And there was no reason for me to need to be there in those woods other than to look for my daughter. So there would be no excuse for me to be there. So if I was there, I was going to jail. And I said, even if I have consent. And he said, consent doesn't run my town. This is my town. I run this town. And he said, my people don't want you here. So I got in the vehicle that I got there in, and I drove off after having an emotional moment on the pavement, because by this point I was distraught and literally unable to hold myself anymore. And I collapsed in the parking lot at the ballpark. A couple people had to help me pull myself together and get up and get in the car and leave from there.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop, with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished.
Hi.
Having a sheriff who's supposed to be on your side act in such a way would intimidate most of us, but not Sandra.
I don't feel intimidated. My husband was a police officer for many, many years. He died with a badge on his chest. And I told the sheriff this. So for me, that wasn't, you know, it's just courtesy, professional courtesy, if you will. I don't feel intimidated by him or by any other member of law enforcement because I've lived with law enforcement most of my life, 25 years we were married. So no, I don't feel intimidated. But do I think that he would throw me in jail? In a heartbeat. I believe that he would not waste a moment putting a pair of handcuffs on me and taking me to jail. You know, I'm not going to let my grandchildren, Jessica's children or my other children's children, I'm not going to let them worry about whether or not their Nana is going to be arrested. There are other people who can do that for me without drawing attention to themselves. So for me, it's best that I don't go, that I stay away, because they're not looking for anybody else. They're looking for me. And as long as I'm not there, then they can search all they like without being hindered.
It's hard to imagine what it must be like in this kind of situation. Having a loved one go missing is difficult enough, but to be threatened and told you're not allowed to look for them, that's just adding salt into an already raw wound. Thankfully, Sandra has people looking for Jessica. Sandra told me more about the searches.
It's very rural. You know, there's an area where there's a pasture over there. The houses are kind of pretty well spaced out on the property, but there's a lot of woods that is out there. There is quite a bit of wooded area. It would be a lot of ground for you to cover if you weren't familiar with the area and you did not have help. I also found this out later. There were several other people who contacted Harrelson County offering their assistance. They had search and rescue canine and cadaver dogs. And when I asked the detective why they would not utilize the services of these individuals, and let me tell you this, I've not spoken to the detective on the phone except for twice. Every other correspondence has been through text messaging. She will not call me, and I have not heard from them in a month now. But at any rate, when I asked her why they would not utilize the services that were offered to them by these search and rescue groups, her response was, in writing, "We have to narrow the search area down first because it's too much area to let a search and rescue dog out to search." The fact of the matter is that the sheriff had no intent of putting forth any effort to try to find my daughter. It was media that he did not want to receive for his county because he's done a horrible job at taking care of his constituents. People in that county are fed up. They're fed up with the drug use. They're fed up with the drug trafficking. And the only ones who are opposed to my having been up there or my doing any publicity at all are the ones who are involved in that type of life. You know, your regular citizens who get up every day and go to work and, you know, take care of themselves and their family and their business, they're the ones that are supporting me and saying, you know, come look, please, we want you to, we need you to find your daughter, you know, whatever we can do to help. It's the ones that have a past that are keeping this from being more than what it really should be. You know, the young lady that went missing from Ohio, I believe, was nationally on the national news. And I couldn't even get the local news to cover my daughter until a month and a half to 2 months after she had already been missing. And the body of the woman from Ohio was found rather quickly once the national news, you know, got wind of it and they started reporting and, you know, people just started coming out the woodworks looking for this girl. And I feel like if Harrelson County had handled it in a similar fashion, that my daughter would not be another one of the missing statistics from Harrelson County. GBI was brought in for a brief moment when they found a phone in the area close to the house that Jessica was last seen walking away from. The guy who lives in the house had thrown the phone out of the window because he thought it was Jessica's phone. GBI was brought in to get into that phone. And once GBI determined that it was not Jessica's phone, they were told by the sheriff to stand down, that they no longer needed their help. And that information came straight from a GBI official that I contacted to find out what was going on with the investigation. I myself contacted the FBI. I had a 2.5 hour conversation on the phone with an FBI agent who also contacted Harrelson County, and Harrelson County refused their assistance as well. And one of the two, remember I said I had two phone calls with the detective, and that's the only two times that I've spoken to her on the phone. That second phone call was made the day that the FBI contacted them to let them know that I had contacted them. And she called me not long after she got off the phone with the FBI agent. And those are the only two conversations that I've had with her.
Apparently, Jessica has not been the only missing person in the area that the police have turned a blind eye to. To Sandra, it appears that law enforcement is stigmatizing select individuals and not doing their best to assist those who are asking for help.
I think there are a lot of connections that could be put together. There have been quite a few people, I don't know if you've looked or not, but there have been quite a few people that have come up missing in the area around where Jessica came up missing as well. There's a young man, they called him Baby G. His name is Stephen Goodwin. And he has been missing for a couple of years now, with about as many leads on him as they have on Jessica. When I say the same area, I mean within the same mile. There's a lot of shady stuff going on up there that, in my opinion, the sheriff doesn't want getting out. And I think that's part of the reason why some of this stuff is covered up.
There's no reason why a missing persons case should not be looked into. Whatever the outcome is to any particular case, those who are searching for a loved one deserve answers, and they most certainly deserve help. The lengths this county is taking to make sure that no negativity is leaked about their community is shocking. According to Sandra, she has been minutes away from doing interviews with media outlets when they have called it off. Also, as she stated before, police have not followed up on critical tips regarding Jessica's disappearance, especially with the suspicious behavior of Seth Odom.
I've set up appointments for them to do video interviews with me and had them call me 15, 20 minutes before we were supposed to have the conversation to tell me, look, we can't run the story. The producers have been told by the mayor that they don't want, they don't want us to run anything. So we're going to pull it. They pulled us from it. There have been quite a few leads that have been called in. There are several people that called in leads that had seen Seth in the woods, that have seen Seth walking down the road with a shovel, stopped and spoke to him and asked him what he was doing. And, you know, I'm looking for something or what have you. These people have reported it to the police department. The police department's done nothing. There was a man that contacted me that found Seth with a vehicle that was stuck in the mud. And he helped him get the vehicle out before he realized who he was. And he was by a lake, more of a pond than a lake. But anyway, it's a body of water in Tallapoosa. Funny thing about that body of water is the sheriff, his sister, and his brother own property surrounding that lake. Seth was pulled out of that lake. His truck was stuck in the mud. I don't know if it was a truck, a car, a van. I don't know what it was. The vehicle was stuck in that mud. A gentleman was flagged down and asked to help him get out. The guy pulled him out. And when the guy shook his hand and he thanked him for pulling him out, he told him his name was Seth Odom. And the guy left straight from there and went directly to Harrelson County Police Department and filed a report. That was never followed up on either.
It makes you wonder, if Seth Odom hadn't turned himself in, would they have actually looked for him to the extent that they should have? He seemed to have enough people covering for him to keep his whereabouts hidden for a significant amount of time. As fate would have it, Seth did turn himself in, but only when he had been bitten by a snake and the bite became infected. Sandra told me about a Facebook post that she came across that Seth's cousin had posted right after Jessica had gone missing.
Right after Jessica went missing, it said, and I sent it to the detective, that said that she wouldn't be found alive. Jessica had been at his house that Wednesday evening before she went missing, because Seth wanted to go see his mom. His mom was over there at the cousin's house. He drove Jessica's car over there, and he ended up taking the keys and leaving Jessica there. And she had to find a way to get home. Well, at any rate, she did manage to get home, which is how she ended up spending the day with Brittany on Thursday, because Brittany went and got her. His cousin made a comment that Seth showed up at his house 2 days after Jessica was reported missing. and had a conversation with him. And he said, all I can tell you is they won't find that girl alive. The police never questioned him.
It's so baffling that law enforcement appears to be doing so little in regards to Jessica's case. For Sandra and her family, no matter what they do, they keep hitting roadblocks.
It's actually so bad that there was a body that was recovered in a neighboring county the weekend that we were up there trying to search. The woman that was found in the dump that had been dismembered, I had called Harrelson County to find out about that young lady. And, you know, because they weren't, at the time, they weren't releasing any information. I couldn't get Harrelson County to tell me if they thought it might or might not be Jessica. So I contacted the sheriff in the county that it was from, and I couldn't even get them to call me back. So I finally called GBI, and GBI actually connected me to the coroner's office. And the woman at the coroner's office went and checked the body parts that they had and came back to the phone to let me know that this young lady that they had found had tattoos. And my daughter did not have any tattoos or piercings. And this young woman did. And that's, it took about a week for me to find out that that was not my daughter. And it would have been as simple as Harrelson County calling and asking them, you know, does this girl have any tattoos? And if yes, then it's not, you know, Jessica. And then them calling me right back and saying, no, ma'am, she's got tattoos. It's not your daughter. But, you know, they wouldn't even give me that courtesy. There was also another young lady who was found on the side of the road in Woodland, where Jessica used to live, who was completely lethargic and unresponsive. And she was found on the side of the road. A lady found her driving to work with her husband. The lady got her to wake up enough to ask. She kept asking her, what's your name? What's your name? What's your name? And finally, the girl said her name was Jessica. They found a backpack not far from where she was. It wasn't right where the girl was. It was away from her. But they found this backpack, and apparently the backpack had an ID in it. The ID said that the girl's birthday was 1986, which is when my daughter was born. So, of course, I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is my child. The girl was very badly beaten. Her face, she was beaten so badly that her eyes were swollen almost completely shut. And several of the people who were trying to help me locate my daughter actually went to the hospital to see if it was my daughter. And we had asked them, could you please just take a picture? I called the police department. Can you please just take a picture of her face? Because people fake IDs all the time, you know, and this backpack that was found may or may not actually belong to this person. It could be someone else's backpack. So, if you take a picture of her, then, you know, and just send it to me, I'll know if it's my daughter. Even if she's been beaten to where you can't tell, I'll know if it's my daughter. And they wouldn't even do that. They wouldn't even send me a picture of her face. And about 3 hours later, the young lady was checked out of the hospital against medical advice, still not completely coherent. She had two, I'm going to call them splints on her legs, a splint on both legs. And she was brought to the car, put in the car. One of the ladies that was working with me walked over to the vehicle and asked the girl, she said, I'm looking for Jessica Earle. Are you Jessica Earle? And the girl looked up at her. And from the description, she said, Sandy, she could have been your daughter. But the woman that was sitting in the driver's seat snapped at her and said, this is not Jessica Earle. Go away. My friend said to the young lady again, she said, ma'am, I need to know if your name is Jessica Earle. I'm trying to find Jessica Earle and her mother is worried about her. If you're Jessica Earle, let me know. And the woman said, the other woman, the woman that was driving said, I already told you she's not Jessica Earle. Now get away from my car, and put her vehicle in reverse and started backing out of the driveway. So we still don't know if that was my daughter or not. You know, because nobody would send me. All they had to do was take a picture at the hospital and send it to me and say, can you verify? And what really struck me as odd about that was that there was a woman who was picked up not long after Jessica went missing, that the detective called me and she said, this girl, we got a phone call from another sheriff's department. They picked up this woman. She's been in a domestic violence situation. And I need to verify with you that she's not your daughter before they let her go. And the girl was able to speak and talk, and she told them what her name was, but the sheriff's office would not release them, would not release the girl until they knew whether or not she was my daughter. So the detective called me. She sent me a text message, and then she sent me a photo of the woman. And I responded back and said, no, ma'am, that's not my daughter. And they let the woman go. Why did they not do the same thing in this situation? Would have been very easy.
So what happened to Jessica Earle on June 8th, 2018? We know that during her last phone call, she was walking down the road. Could she have gotten a ride with someone? What about these theories that the sheriff's department suggested, like she's at a rehab and just doesn't want anyone to know? Or that she had just walked into the woods to commit suicide? Many suspect that Seth was involved in her disappearance. It appears that she was initially charmed by this guy, but it didn't take long for her to start to see through him. Jessica was so excited to purchase that four-wheeler for her son, and was so upset when she realized that she had been swindled. Could she have threatened to go to the police over this matter? Seth has an extensive criminal history. In fact, at the time, he had two felony warrants out for his arrest. Could he have been worried about Jessica turning him in? Could that have been a motive to make her disappear? No matter what, Sandra and her family will follow up on every lead that comes their way. They aren't giving up until they find her. At the time of Jessica's disappearance, she was described as 5'5" tall and weighing around 120 pounds. She has brown hair and green eyes. You can find more information and updates on her case on Facebook. The page is called Missing Jessica Earle. The Harrelson County Sheriff's Office is offering a $1,000 reward for any information pertaining to Jessica's whereabouts. Jessica's family has added a $13,000 reward. They hope that the increased reward will encourage someone to come forward. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Jessica Earle, please contact the Harrelson County Sheriff's Office at 770-646-2011.
It's been difficult, but, you know, one of the things that I was raised by a God-fearing Christian woman, and one of the things my mama told me was, you should never have to defend yourself against an enemy, that your job is to take care of you and yours. You do not worry about things that you cannot control, but you control what you can. And the ignorance of some of these individuals, although sometimes more than I can possibly stand to bear, is part of the reason that I keep going, because I'm gonna find my daughter no matter what. My last breath will be taken trying to find my child. But I don't have the time nor the wherewithal to respond to some of the ignorant comments and statements that have been put out there for the public. I know better. People that know Jessica know better. And you know, these are just ignorant people with nothing better to do but to slander somebody's name. And I'm not going to give them my time. We're kind of just doing whatever it is that we can, you know, just to try to go through the day and handle it however we can. You know, it's not, I mean, I know I sound like I'm okay, but somebody kind of chastised me once for not being an emotional basket case. And my response to them was, I fall apart when I find my child. I can't find my child if I'm not level-headed. And if, you know, I'm an emotional wreck, that's not going to solve anything right now. When I find my baby, I'll take a moment, I'll sit down, I'll fall apart, and then I'll get up and I'll start worrying about justice. There's an order that things need to be done in. And right now, me falling apart, you're only as strong as the people that you have supporting you. And I have an awful lot of support around me. It's one of the things that's keeping me going. I have grandchildren who depend on me. I have children that depend on me. I can't let this one thing interfere with, you know, my having to take care of all of these other people. That being said, everybody also understands that sometimes I just need to have a moment, and they give me that. We are, as a family, we're broken. Jessica was kind of our go-to girl. We would call her if something came up and we had an issue. Or, you know, I just started classes again this semester and I was not going to go. And my son said, you know what, Mama, Jessica would be really mad at you if you didn't get back in school. I went, you know, started my classes again. And that's something that Jessica and I would share on a regular basis. We can't do that. Everything in our life has been turned upside down by the fact that Jessica is missing.
That brings us to the end of episode 142. I'd like to thank Sandra for sharing her story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There's a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Illinois. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.